Okay, so that's Jimmy's reel two. You were talking about Lille, Jim.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we pulled back to Lille, and of course it was Berlin. And one thing that really struck me there, and there was buildings, and there was heaps of charred, burnt bodies piled up like they pile the carcasses of sheep for when they killed them. For
whose bodies? Whose bodies?
Well, I should imagine they were French people.
You don't know because they were charred.
I should imagine they were French people. Mm. And then, like I say, from level.
What did just the, when you saw that? What did you think?
Well, I thought, well, it looked like they've had a hammering round here, and there must have been an awful lot of incendiary bombs for those bodies to be found like that.
Did it give you did you then realise that this is war now?
Well, this is war. It's not fair.
So from there you were going to say to
from there. To my recollection, we went to Armentieres.
Okay.
And we was on one side of a river or canal or something, and we was in position there. Of course, the Germans came to the other side, and that went on for quite some time. And then it was decided that we'd wreck all the transport.
At that time, they were still trying to push you back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had to wreck all the transport. Mm. All petrol tanks were burst, and petrol spread all over, and they were set on fire.
Mm.
And from there, except the Brengel carriers, it was more or less on foot.
Yeah. So I suppose now it's beginning to look pretty serious, isn't it?
Yeah. And I can remember from there, I got on a 1500-weight truck. It was full of people in the back and also on the top.
Yeah.
So that the canvas, the framework of the canvas collapsed and it was more or less pressing on those underneath.
Yeah. Soldiers.
Soldiers, yes. Oh, it was, I won't like to estimate how many was on.
Yeah.
But it was literally overloaded.
And where were they heading for?
Well, we were just heading down the road towards Popperings, Dunker, you know.
Yeah.
And I can remember that somebody had got a Dixie and milked some cows, and we had this Dixie of milk in the wagon, and we were going down the road. And all of a sudden, the Stukas came dived on him. We pulled up, ran out into the field, and the fences were just sheets of corrugated iron tin.
Yeah.
And we laid down behind them and felt as safe as the row of houses. And these Stukas just machine gun through them over the top of us. And when they'd sort of moved off and we got back, of course the truck had had a direct hit, and that was the truck and the Dixie had gone.
What about casualties then?
Well, there was quite a few. There were quite a few casualties, and from there we carried on down the road, and we came to a place. There was about four or five different roads, and I remember a signpost saying Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And the divisional commander was there, the brigade commander, and of course at this time we were like in a straddle leap. I mean, we weren't all together as we should have been. And our second in command, Major Camp, was there, and they was detailing different units to different farms, and they told us where we had to go, and we went to this farm, and that was the first time we'd any food for about 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, but you were still pretty much all together then as a 4th Battalion.
I was a 4th Battalion, yeah.
Yeah.
And we got into this farm, and we got a couple of slices of bread and eggs, I don't know if they were fried poached or what they were.
Yeah.
And a basin of right sweet black coffee.
Yeah.
And we got that. And then they said, right, now you can get up in the loft over that barn and get down to sleep. There isn't a German within 40 miles of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we ate this food, drank the coffee, and we went up into this loft. And I always had an habit that I put my ground sheet down, one folded blanket on top of it, laid on that, then threw another blanket over me, lifted my feet up and tucked it under.
I know what you mean.
And I was just doing that when zip, bang, and half the roof went.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we piled them.
What was that, a shell or something? Or?
It was a shell.
Yeah.
And when we got out, we were completely surrounded with German tanks.
Right.
And they made all around the farm as a defence position.
When you say they did, battalion did.
The battalion did.
Yeah.
All around the farm, and of course me, being the boys' anti-tank rifleman, me and my number two, a lad called Reynolds from Burnley, we was made to go out into the meadow about 50 yards in front of everybody else.
How many boys anti-tank riflemen were there per company?
Well, there was one per platoon.
One per platoon.
So that's like about 3 companies.
About 3, yeah. Okay.
And we went out about 50 yards. And of course, these tanks were about 200 or 300 yards away. Just stood there.
Do you know what sort of tanks they were?
Well, I think they were German Mark IVs.
Panzers?
Yeah. And my orders were that I had to keep my eye on them, but I hadn't to fire unless they started to come towards us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a beautiful hot sunny day. I led on my back, enjoying the sunshine, and I told Reynolds, my number two, I said, if you see them moving, tell me. Anyway, after a while, all the animals went.
Yeah, no words.
I looked, and of course the tanks were coming towards us.
Mm.
And I let off two or three shots.
How far away were they, Jim, now?
I should say roughly somewhere about 100 yards, 150 yards. And I let off two or three shots, and I realised I might as well have been using a pea shooter.
Were you hitting it at all?
Well, yes, I was hitting it, but it wasn't doing any damage.
What was it doing? Bouncing off?
Not just bouncing off.
Was it exploding?
Well, no, they were solid shot.
Okay. So just bouncing off.
Just bouncing off. And I said to Reynolds, I said, right, pick that ammunition up. I said, I'm back in the farm with the rest of them. And he picked the two boxes of ammunition and he shut off at the run. And I then grabbed the gun and followed him.
Yeah.
And of course, I think I went over that edge like one going over Beecher's Brook in the Grand National.
Did they fire at you?
Oh, they were firing. They were machine gunning at us.
Yeah.
And we got back with the rest of the battalion. And Captain Kay, he got ordered to find a way out. Like I said, we were completely surrounded with tanks. Mm. All the way.
Mm.
And they decided that at a certain time, as it started to go dusk, it wasn't dark, but when the light started to fade, we would have to try to get out, five at a time, run about 250 yards up this road in full view of these tanks, through a gateway into a field, up an edge, and then up like a bit of an incline in this field. When we got to the top, in the sanitation ditches up to the neck.
Right.
And go that way for about a mile, a mile and a half.
Mm.
And by the time it came the turn of the five that I was with, there was quite a lot of other troops there besides these lines.
Yeah.
And the five I was with, there was two out of the Royal Warwicks, and there was myself, Lance Corporal Roland Aspinall, and a Private Bill Earnshaw of the 4th Battalion East Lines. And by this time, the road was littered with bodies.
Yeah.
And we set off at the run, and about halfway, these tanks started firing at us.
Yeah.
The two Royal Warwicks bought it on the road.
Yeah.
We got down behind the bodies.
Yeah.
And you could hear the bullets coming into them. We waited till we felt that the guns had sort of gone away from us. And we got up again. Run like hell through this gate. And we were going up the edge. And I saw these tracer bullets coming down, cutting the edge.
Mm.
And I shouted to the other two, I said, for God's sake, get down. Well, I was lucky, I dropped into a bit of a hole. And Roland Aspinall and Biller and Shaw was a little bit higher than me. Roland Aspinall had his elbow sort of blown up.
Yeah.
And Biller and Shaw had his ankle.
Yeah.
I got up to grab them, to pull them down where I was. And bang, 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 bang. And everything went black. And when I came round, the stretcher bearer sergeant was sort of waking me up, and I said, "Are you all right, Jim?" I said, "Yeah." "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah." Well, I said, "Hey, it's in up," and this burst of machine gun fire off the German tank had gone right through my steel helmet from one side and out the other, ripped the cage that fit on the head to shreds.
Well, that was quite lucky, wasn't it, Jim?
Yeah.
So, presumably, you were concussed.
Oh, I was concussed. And there was a Bren gun carrier there, and they put Roland Aspinall and Biller and Shaw on it. And what was the sergeant called? There were two O'Malley. Mm. The stretcher bearer sergeant. He was a band sergeant, actually. He said, "Are you getting on there, Jim?" I said, no, I said, "I'm all right." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm all right."
Mm.
So I just plumped my steel helmet back on my head.
What was left of it?
What were left of it, what good it was.
Mm.
And I carried on up this field, got in the sanitation ditch up to my neck with the anti-tank rifle over my head.
On your own, Jim? Nobody else with you?
Oh, no, there was about 40 of us.
Right.
Sergeant Major Billet and a couple of officers. I won't mention their names.
No.
Because they hadn't the guts to lead us out. They left Sergeant Major A to do it, using his wristwatch as a compass.
Mm-hmm.
And we went up this sanitation ditch, as I say, for about a mile and a half. And we could hear the Germans shouting to one another. There was only about 15 yards either side of us.
Yeah.
But they'd no idea that we were
there.
Going up this
Just to go back to where those tanks were and where you had that fire from the tanks, was there infantry there, German infantry there, around with...
Yeah, but they you could see the German infantry further behind the tanks, you know.
Got it. So you're still proceeding down this drain area,
yes.
Germans either side, and then what happens then?
Well, when we got so far out, it was decided that it was safe enough to get out of this drain that we'd gone through.
Hmm.
And then we proceeded on then, on the road to Dunkirk.
Right. How far were you at that stage from Dunkirk, Jim, would you guess?
Ooh, I should say somewhere about 15 miles or so.
Hmm. So, was it a case then of you're going to Dunkirk and it's just a question of getting there? There was no question of staying where you were and fighting?
Oh, yes, we did. We stayed at, I don't know just whereabouts it was, but you came to a place and, of course, you stayed and... You stayed fighting,
yeah.
And while all the people came through, and then, of course, when they'd gone past and somebody else was behind, you had to go back then.
But did you realise at this stage that it was going to be an evacuation, or what did?
Well, all we were told was that if we got to Dunkirk Sands and we had our weapons with us and everything, we were going on. Didn't say how or anything at all. They just said, get to Dunkirk Sands and you're going home. And like I say, we kept, it was so far, and then you got out and took up a position and somebody else came through you.
Yeah.
And I always remember, I don't know just where that was, but we went over a bridge and there was an horse half in it and half.
Yeah, yeah. Half up the tree, up the bridge.
Up the bridge and half underneath.
Yeah.
And of course, when we got to Dunkirk, the evacuation from Dunkirk had finished.
So can you just describe when you got to that beach at Dunkirk, what you saw?
Well, there was just literally thousands of men, and there were devastation everywhere, you know. There was all sorts of vehicles in the ditch. The mole was practically obliterated in Dunkirk, where they'd been taking them off from. And we were instructed then that we had to go further up, and we had to go to a place called Bray Dunes. And we got to Bray Dunes, and well, it was sand hills and all that. Anyway, it was just for the men.
Yeah.
It was literally just masses. Yeah. To me, it was the biggest football match crowd I've ever seen in my life.
Right. So although you said when you got there, the evacuation was virtually over, you just said there were still thousands and thousands of men there.
We got on the beach, and I think roughly we were there a couple of days before we actually came off. It was either late on the 2nd or early the 3rd
of
June
1940.
Somebody, I mean, we were literally the last to get there, because when the retreat started, we was in the front line. We was one of the forward divisions.
Yeah.
We was on the right hand side of the British Expedition Force.
Okay.
And somebody, scratching about in the sand, found a tin of sardines.
Right.
Well, that started a mad scramble, everybody scrambling in the sand.
Yeah.
And then, when it became your turn, you just got in this huge queue of men that just went out into the sea up to the neck.
Yeah, yeah. But when you were there on the beach of Dunkirk, were the people around you mainly from your battalion?
Well, like I said, there was about 40 of us.
Okay.
There was old people there. You know, it was just a case of get to the beach, and that was it. Mm. You know.
So it's your turn then. So you're lying in this queue, waiting for a boat, presumably.
Well, these little boats with engines on were coming in, towing about half a dozen lighter wooden boats with no engines.
Yes,
know, like these that you see on a ship as a safe. If it sinks, you can get away.
Like lifeboats.
Like lifeboats.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd come in and they'd be towing half a dozen of them, seven or eight.
And is that what you got onto, one of those?
Well, what I did, by the time I got out there, I was up to the neck in water.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, go back, it's full. And I said, I'm not bloody going back.
Mm.
So I hung on to the back of the boat, swimming with one hand,
while
they took us out. And to my recollection, it was an old River Medway paddle steamer.
Uh-huh.
The Medway Queen,
And
we got there and we got on board the boat, and as you got on, they took your weapon off you, took the bolt out, threw that over the side one way and your weapon the other way.
So you still had your weapon with you?
Yeah.
You've managed to hang on to that?
Hang on to it.
Yeah. So they threw your weapon?
Oh, they threw it into the sea.
They ditched it?
Yeah. Everybody. Rifles or anything. Just took the bolt out and slung
it. What would have been the idea of that then, Jim?
Well, it was weight.
Okay.
There was concern in rescuing men, not equipment.
Okay.
That's what it was all about.
Yeah.
And I always remember that, I'd waded out into the sea up to my neck, and I was wringing wet through. So I stripped off and laid my clothes down on a grill over the engine room where the heat from the engine was coming. And a sailor had given me a blanket to shove around myself. And at about 5 or 6 thousand cigarettes back on my back.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, I'm dry now, I feel warm, I'll have a smoke. And when I opened them, they weren't a bit of you. They were ringing wet through, so they just went over the side.
Where did the cigarettes come from, Jim?
Well, when we were told that the retreat was going to start, the nappies threw the doors open and you could just go and get whatever you wanted. And they'd gone with a wagon and come back with literally loads of cigarettes and chocolate and all things.
Yeah. So what about now the trip back to the UK on this paddle steamer?
Yeah. Well,
stop the tape. Okay, Jim, so you're on this paddle boat back from Dunkirk.
Yeah, and we came back and we landed. As we were pulling out, the Stukas were still dive bombing, and a couple of bombs came very close on the side. And I can remember we all had to get at one side of the boat. Now, whether it was old and leaking or what, and they made us all get at one side to keep it out of the water, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we docked at Harwich.
Oh, that seemed a long way round, a long way to go round, didn't it?
Yeah. We docked at Harwich, and as the boat was coming into port, as boats do, the captain blew the hooter.
Yeah.
And everybody hit the deck with their hands behind their neck, their head, yeah, thinking it was bombs.
I think it was a warning.
Yeah.
What was the just on the decks of that boat, just before you leave the boat, what were the sights and what did it look like without those men on the decks of that boat?
Oh, well, it just looked like wherever they could put them, there were men. Mm. It was absolutely packed.
What sort of state were they in?
Well, they were rough. I mean, some had clothes, some hadn't. And there was one or two wounded.
Mm-hmm. So then you disembarked from the boat.